almost an intrinsic memory of such a world, because we who live in a different one are not content with it. And we sense that something has gone wrong. I want to talk to you today about suffering. I know we marvel a bit at the words of Job in Job 14:1, that a man who is born a woman is a few days and full of trouble, and we think perhaps that he is speaking out of his anguish, and I'm sure he was. But I want to say this at the outset this morning, that he was right. We are of few days, and those days are full of trouble. There are things in life that are bright and beautiful. The evidence of God's care, I think, is present. But there is a dark side to life. And when Solomon observes in Ecclesiastes 1:14 that the things that are wanting cannot be numbered, and the things that are broken cannot be fixed, and in chapter 3, verse 10, that he had seen the travail that God had given the sons of men to be exercised with, he's speaking the truth. There are many in this audience who are young and probably have had very little heartache and suffering and disappointment in life. But I say this to you not to discourage you, but to prepare you. You will know it. You will know it. There are those in this audience who have already had a taste of it. Physical pain, yes. But even more powerfully painful, the heartache and heartbreak that comes because of those emotional anguishes that fall upon us for many reasons. I want to begin this morning with the question that's raised in the 9th chapter of John, and I invite you to turn with me to that place, because we usually, confronted with suffering and pain, we ask the question, why? Where is this coming from? Why is this happening to me? Jesus was in the city of Jerusalem with his disciples, and they passed by a blind beggar. And the disciples asked the question, who sinned, this man or his parents? Now, that's a question that we ask, the why question. The problem with the question was it was based upon too narrow an assumption. And that is that all sin, or that all physical suffering, perhaps in a sense all suffering, is a consequence of sin, punishment, retribution. And we want to know why we have to suffer as we do. Why did this terrible thing happen? Why did my loved one have to get sick in such a tragic way? Why did I have to get cancer? Why did I lose my job? Why did my husband leave me? Why did my wife leave me? Why did my children burden me by their behavior? The questions are endless. And when we can't find an answer, when we probe and seek and search and we cannot find an answer as to why our lives are as they are, it is a possibility that that will absolutely threaten the foundation of all we believe about God, about his goodness. And we'll begin to say, how can God be good? We ask the question, is God paying me back for something? Have I done something terribly wicked and this is the result of it? Is this the consequence of it? And when we probe our lives, we just can't find anything there that would give an answer to our problems and justify what's happening to us as we see it, then we say God is not good and He is not faithful. Jesus answers in the third verse of the ninth chapter of John, and He says that it was not the sin of this man nor of his parents that caused it, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. What He says is that this man's blindness had a divine purpose. His answer opened up the thinking of the disciples because they needed to quit thinking so narrowly. And it projected things into the very throne of God and God's purposes, His eternal purpose, that the works of God should be made manifest in him. I don't know all the implications of that. Did God actually, specifically make this man blind from birth? It's possible. Or did it just happen because God has subjected the world to vanity, and all across this world people die because that's the way it is, and people are blind because that's the way it is, and people can't hear because that's the way it is, and people can't do many things because that's the way it is. Some are born without limbs, and that's the way it is. And what we need to understand is that God has done that. Now that startles us. But that's what the third chapter of Genesis says in plain language. You are dust, and to dust you shall return. And in the fourth chapter, we must put these two out of the garden, he said, lest they eat of the tree of life and live forever. Because of sin, because Adam and Eve sinned, the world we live in is subject to vanity. I think Solomon refers to that in the ninth chapter of Ecclesiastes when he says, time and chance happens to all men. The race is not to the swift. Things happen. It's not as though God chose you as the subject of that tragedy or the object of it. And He's pouring out some special purpose in you, but He can use and does use this. I'm telling you. Some of us are not going to pay attention until God puts some pain on us. And it ought to sober some. You don't want to suffer. And you look all around you and you see suffering everywhere. And you know good and well that as a human being you're not going to escape suffering. But it's entirely conceivable to me that God might put suffering on some of us just to get our attention. 119th Psalm, verse 71, it was good for me that I was afflicted because now I understand your will. So, Jesus says there's a higher purpose here than what you're thinking of. Suffering is not just God's retribution. But He has taken this man, He has used this man's suffering, however it may have come about, always in the final analysis. God either initiates things or He permits them, whichever. And blindness and sickness is something He introduced into the world because we chose to rebel against Him. We need some new categories sometimes when we think about suffering and what it's about. A case in point, the second Corinthians chapter 12, verse 7, where the Apostle Paul says that I might not be exalted overmuch, that I might not become proud because of the greatness of the revelation that he received. It was so great, he said, that things were told him that it was not legal or lawful for a man to utter. It was not allowed by God for him to speak it. Many things he'd received, revelations that he was instructed to declare to the world, but this was a revelation, he said, that God said, don't you tell any man. And so it died with him, whatever he heard. But so that he would not be exalted over him. So that he would not be proud and arrogant and lose his soul. This passage says that a messenger of Satan was sent. Somebody says, well, but it it says a messenger of Satan. That's correct. And I have no doubt that this messenger came from the devil. That whatever this thorn in the flesh was, it came from the devil. But I want to say this to you, that the devil never had any interest in keeping people humble. The devil's interest is to make them proud. Or he might want just to discourage and to flatten and overwhelm and cause people to look up in the face of God and say, "You did this to me, and I'm through with it." What this says is that God was engineering this matter. And he used Satan's machinations, which were intended obviously for another person, to bless his servant Paul. Now, it's difficult for us to view our suffering this way, but we need to learn to do it. That the works of God might be manifest in him. Perhaps that's the purpose of our suffering. That we might be restrained from a disposition or attitude that would be our spiritual and therefore our essential undoing. There's another reason for suffering. In order that there is a purpose to this suffering. Well, can God be behind some adversity? I want to tell you this morning, in a sense, God's behind every bit of it. Number one, he's behind the general disease and disaster and death in this world. In the sense that he did it as a consequence of man's rebellion against him. Man who is serving God, man in the Garden of Eden didn't need that. But man in rebellion, man in disobedience, man in sin needs it. Otherwise, God would not have done it. He did it, says Romans 8, verse 20, in hope. Can you think of what a hellish place this would be if all of us were allowed to live forever in our wickedness? You think this world is bad? If not one of us ever suffered a single pain, and never ended our existence here, but we're just getting worse and worse with every succeeding age. There are no words to express what a hellish place this would be. God did what he did to help. And it may be difficult for us to see that, but that is true. Now, the disciples were not entirely wrong when they said that this man sin, or his parents, that this came upon him. Because it is absolutely true that not only does the sin as it came in the beginning lead to the tragedy that we see of a world full of pain and disaster and death, but our own personal sins visit upon us a lot of horror. We can see the connection many times between what we are doing with our lives and what's happening to us. But I want to say that sin generally brings misery. Sin brings misery upon you because you're not made to live that way, and because it's going to alienate you from yourself and give you all kinds of misery and anguish inside. Your conscience is going to be giving you misery. And sin is going to bring suffering because it destroys your relationship with other people. And that's going to break your heart because you're made to live with others, and because your ties with others are important to you. And then you're going to see all these kinds of tragic things happening. Maybe a marriage will fall apart totally. Maybe your relationship with your children will die. Maybe you'll be all alone. Sin can do that. And you can draw the line directly from this kind of disposition and attitude of rebellion against God and the trouble that comes. That's just the way it is. We can blame God with it, I suppose, because he made us that way. He made us for himself. And he made us so that we would live by righteousness and be at peace by purity. And we've decided we're going to go the dark way. And now the consequence of that is coming to us. I don't question that. And not only the sin that we commit brings us misery, but also the sins that other people commit bring us misery. We live in a world where there's all kinds of hellish ungodliness. You don't have to look very far in the newspaper to see it. And little children suffer. But you will suffer from that many times because people don't care about right and they'll do what they will to you. And you'll find that amazingly enough and shockingly enough and tragically enough that even in the bosom of God's people, you'll have people who'll do you injury. As Paul says, he was in peril of false brethren. People who have such a mindless and ungodly disposition that they find delight in giving other people misery because of envy or jealousy or just pure hatred or just pure meanness. And it's a sad thing to think about that in the bosom of God's people, but it has happened a long, long time throughout the centuries and it happens still. Roots of evil, then sin. We've already learned that the devil is at work. If you read the book of Job, you know that there are some tragedies in life that come from him. It was not God who directly killed the children of Job. It was the devil, with God's permission, of course. But it was the devil's intention to prove that Job absolutely was as shallow as tissue paper, that he was not committed to God at all, that all he wanted was what he was getting. And when that stopped, he had cursed God to his face. That was what he believed about Job. And the devil believes that about you, too. But you're caught in a war between the devil and God sometimes, and the devil wants to demonstrate that God's a fool for having anything to do with the likes of us. But anyway, he's the one that killed the children of Job. And he's the one that destroyed his property, and he's the one that afflicted the body of Job. Now you say, does that give us the explanation of all illness and death and suffering and catastrophe? No, it does not. Because the Bible also tells us that God has taken the lives of people. You find case after case, the Lord struck him. A classic case in the New Testament is Herod Agrippa I. He pompously addressed a group of ambassadors who said, "It's the voice of God, not a man." And he was so bloated with his self-importance that, and by his wickedness toward God's people, that the Lord struck him. An angel of God struck him. The Lord caused Miriam to have leprosy. The Lord caused Gehazi, the servant of Elijah, to have leprosy. The Lord caused Uzziah, the king of Judah, to have leprosy. And he died of that. So to say that the devil is responsible for all this, and we need to put the blame where it ought to be, is not entirely accurate. Now there may be some accuracy in it, in that the devil is the one who attempted in the beginning, brought sin and rebellion to the world because he invited Eve to rebel, and she gave to her husband, and he did eat, and so sin and the suffering that comes from it could be laid at the devil's feet in that sense. I don't question that. But this idea that we should never attribute disease or death to God is not true. God can bring suffering. And he does bring suffering. And if you want to know the answer to the question, where does suffering come from? It's either from sin, because of the original fall and all the trouble that came as a consequence of that, or our own personal transgressions, or the transgressions of other people. And the devil is tied into that tightly. And some of our sufferings may indeed come from him, or they may come from God himself. At last, everything that is either ordained by or permitted by God. Now, God could stop the sins of other people injuring you by stopping those people. And he could wipe the world clean of them. But then he'd have to wipe us all out. And in his patient grace and love, he has waited for us to change our direction. As I said, God could have let us live on forever in our rebellion and our iniquity. But it would have been a bad place indeed that we would have lived in. But I think the most important thing to know about all this, when we ask how do we know where our suffering is coming from, it doesn't matter. It does not matter where the suffering is coming from. The question never was one of where the suffering's coming from. The question is, what is this suffering going to mean to me? The truth is, I'm never going to know with any assurance where the suffering's coming from. Unless I can see a direct connection between what I did, made a drunkard out of myself, now this is where I am. Made a drug addict out of myself, this is where I am. Became an adulterer and a womanizer, and then this is where I am as a consequence. I can see the direct connection between those. But there will be a lot of things that will happen to us, and we will not know why. Take the book of Job. Twice in that book, God spoke. Twice. Job didn't hear the first conversation. He wasn't privy to that. We're privy to that. We read the book. And we learn what the setting was, what caused all this. We're not told any more than Satan said, "You think he's a righteous man. I'm telling you he's sorry." And then the only time Job ever heard God speak was at the end of all this, when his suffering had been intense upon him for a long time. And he wants to ask God, why? And did you know he never finds out? And he's content. Job never found out why he was suffering. God never told him. There is nothing in the answer that's given in the book that suggested Job ever learned why he was suffering. But what he did learn was that God was true and that he had no business questioning him. The thing that Job had lost that was most severe of all in all of this was not his property, and it wasn't his children, and it wasn't his health. What he had lost was God and his conviction that God was good and God was just and God was faithful. That's what he had lost, or almost lost. That's the thing he was questioning, and that's the thing that was killing him. And sometimes that's the thing that's killing us. We don't understand why these things are happening, and we don't have answers. And I want to say to you, God may never give you the answer. Because what's important in all this is not why it's happening and where it's coming from. That's what our response is going to be. The truth is, that adversity is God's greatest tool to mold and shape our lives as He wants them to be. That ought not to surprise people who believe and who have celebrated even this particular hour, a crucifixion, awful pain, as a means to achieve greater glory. We know that. We believe in it. But our problem is we have difficulty making application of that great principle to our own lives. We are not going to know. That's the simple truth. Now let me take up something else with you. It'll help us if we can get some perspective on what's happening to us. John chapter 11. You remember the story. Jesus is in Perea. Word comes to him from Mary and Martha in Bethany that the one you love is sick. Now, you know they would not have sent that message if it was just a momentary illness of some inconsequence. They sent this message because he was desperately ill. And Jesus' response is startling. You know, we feel at times that God doesn't hear our prayers. We are suffering. We are anguished. And we plead with God for release. We plead with God for help. And He doesn't hear our prayers. That, of course, is not true. But look at this in order to get some perspective on suffering. This is a very narrow part of time, and I recognize it does not illustrate this long stretch of suffering that characterizes many of us in our lives, but the principle is there. Here we have the case of Lazarus' sickness and Jesus does not come. What he says is to the disciples, this sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified thereby. Now, that's a hard thing, but can you suppose that the sickness you have, or the trouble you have, or the difficulty you're having, might be for the glory of God? Can you conceive that? But he didn't go. And verse 5 says, now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. This is not lack of love, but he doesn't go. And Mary and Martha are sitting down there in Bethany. And they know how long it takes to get from Perea to Bethany. And when that time has elapsed, they're sitting there and they're looking down the road toward Jericho and they're waiting for him to come and they are anxious to see his silhouette there on the horizon. They are waiting for Jesus and they expect him because he loved them and they know he loved them. And he's healed how many people? But he doesn't come. He does not come. And finally, on some particular morning or evening, they watch their brother breathe his last. And he's dead. And I can tell you something, Mary and Martha didn't understand it. What is the question that's raised by both of them? Lord, if you had been here, our brother would not have died. Where were you? Where were you when our brother that you love was ill? And you knew the anguish we were going through. You know how much we love him. I want you to put yourself in this picture. Don't you care? Don't you understand? Why don't you respond? And then when you come, it's too late. Ever had that feeling? A sense of abandonment? The principle that's working here is a very simple one. And that is that God had greater purposes in mind in what he did. It was that God might be glorified, he says, for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified thereby. There are purposes that are greater than our comfort. Let me tell you something. Saving our souls from hell, that's greater than our comfort. And saving other people from hell, that's greater than our comfort. These are overarching principles that go beyond anything we're concerned about. And some of my problem many times is I'm thinking about what I want right now in this life, and I don't want to go through this long extended suffering. I want some ease, and I want some peace from these thorns in the flesh. Well, Jesus is trying to get us to look beyond ourselves. And I don't know that it can happen. In fact, I am persuaded it cannot happen unless we suffer and learn the lessons that only that can bring. A greater purpose. Now, one thing we need to remember, when Jesus came at last, he said, where did you bury him? Where did you put him? And they go to the tomb. Although his sisters say he's been dead 4 days. I want you to remember that. 4 days he's been dead. Jesus delayed a long time. And as he's there and sees the heartbroken gathering, the scripture says Jesus wept. One thing you can be assured of, that you will not be abandoned when you're suffering. He will know and understand, and he'll be with you. We don't have a high priest who cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmity, says Hebrews 4:15. I'll tell you one thing.
You'll never have to experience what he experienced. And that was the absolute abandonment of God on the cross.
If you suffer, if I suffer, we'll never be alone. And what we've got to face the fact in all this is that God will use this. He will use it. I don't care how painful. I don't care how much it seems the end of the world. God will use this. He understands, first of all, our pain. He will never put upon us more than we can bear. He will not fail to put on us what we can. Jeremiah once, when he was complaining about his situation, the 12th chapter of Jeremiah, and he had a lot to complain about. He was hated by his people. All kinds of conspiracies made against him, even by his own relatives. Every time he opened his mouth, they were disgusted with him. They were irritated and totally finished with him. And then he says to himself, if you have run with footmen and they have wearied you, how will you contend with horses? If this is destroying you, Jeremiah, what are you going to do if it really gets tough? My point is simply this, that God will lay upon us some tough times. But he knows what the pain is. And he knows how much we can endure. And he knows how much we need to endure. And remember something else. It'll always be for our good. How are we going to know that? Well, by knowing him. If you don't know God, then I can assure you that all your pain and suffering is going to have a very adverse effect on you. You'll begin to doubt and finally deny that he cares. Unless you know it. You know when you know somebody and all the past record that you have of their behavior towards you, then out of that, when times get really tough, you can trust. And that's the reason that I want to say to each one here, and especially to the young people who never suffered that much, you need to make your faith strong. You need to know God well. The cross of Christ needs to go down deep in your heart. You need to remember how much he's already suffered for your sake, and he knows what pain is. To love is to suffer. And he is not going to abandon you. Romans 8:28 says, all things work together for good to them that love God and are called according to his purpose. And that's, I think, a truth that needs to go down into our hearts. God can work together for your good what Satan does to you. God can work together for your good what other people do to you. And God himself can put you in a situation that he will work together for your good, even though it causes you much pain. Now, in the final analysis, it's not whether we understand why all this is happening or not. That's significant. Frankly, it's a considerable study to try to figure out just exactly where all these various adversities can come from upon a human being. And I don't feel totally secure in knowing, in that I do know all about. In fact, I have to say at last, about many things, it puzzles me to death. I don't know the answer. I've seen too much suffering in my lifetime that I couldn't make head or tail out of. And I've quit suggesting to people that this may be the case or that may be the case. Because whether they understand it or I understand it doesn't make any difference. God loves us and he's in control of this world. The issue is, will I love him or will I trust him? Only two choices we really have in all this. We can trust God to glorify himself and to bless us through this adversity.
And then it'll mean something. One wonderful thing about being a Christian, we don't have to fear any suffering. We can embrace every bit of it because God will turn it to our good. None of it will overwhelm us. I don't care how vicious the source may be. Or we can focus on our pain and become either disheartened or bitter. Well, if that's how life is going to be, I just quit. Can you imagine that? It can happen. But it can be worse than that. You can get bitter toward other people and you can get bitter toward God. And that can be true even as you sit in an assembly like this at regular times. But that's a choice. It's a choice of an attitude toward God. It's the choice that Mary and Martha had. Jesus said to them, if you will believe me, you will see the glory of God. He had said to the disciples before he left Perea, this sickness is not unto death. Can we believe that? This suffering of ours is not unto ultimate death. This disease of ours, this heartbreak of ours, it is not unto ultimate death. It will not destroy it. But God will use it to enlarge us. God will use it to strengthen us. God will use it to make us more trusting. God will use it to make us to make us more godly and loving and kind and patient. All those things we will work through them because His intention is to transform us. But our challenge is to choose whether we're going to be disheartened, discouraged, or even bitter, or whether it's going to move us to trust God. I've seen both things happen. I've seen people who get into trouble and the first thing they want to do is forget about God. They abandon the assemblies. They walk away from all their responsibilities and commitments to the Lord because they're having trouble. And they didn't entertain that possibility. I think there's some people who became Christians because of what they thought they were going to get out of it right now. We've got a lot of preaching going on in this country of ours that says just that. God's going to do something for you now. Life's not going to be hard. He'll take all that away. Pain will be removed. You're not supposed to be sick. You're not supposed to suffer. Well, let me just say this to you. That is nonsense. And so when something bad happens to us, we're through with it. As a guaranteed formula for failure. Or I've seen people who, when they hit times that absolutely are devastating, and you'd think they couldn't stand it. And you ask yourself, how do they? And they do. And not only do they endure it, they become more loving, more trusting, and more pure of heart. And they've never been that close to God in their lives. Now, if we don't make that choice, we can turn that which God intended to be a blessing to us into a tragedy. But it won't be His fault. Whom the Lord loves, He chastens and scourges every child that He receives. So quoted the writer of Hebrews, the writer of Proverbs, in the 12th chapter of his book. No chastening for the present seems joyous, he goes on to say in verse 11. But afterward, it yields the peaceable fruits of righteousness to those that are exercised by it. Let us suffer patiently, and let us never say, God doesn't understand. And let us never say, God doesn't care. And let us never say, God is not hearing us. God is hearing us. God is hearing us. And He will never do anything that is not for our good. I cannot tell you
that is a consequence of patient endurance. Your suffering, your heartache, and your heartbreak will in time go away in this life. Because there are some heartaches that never leave. And there are some thorns that are never removed. And you think back in the scripture, and it doesn't take long to remember some. I think about Jeremiah. Thorn never got taken out. He was abused all his days and finally carried down to Egypt where he didn't want to go. And there he died. And I think about Hosea. The word is never spoken in that prophetic book that Gomer ever loved him again, really. Even though he took her back from her adulteries and bought her back from the bond servitude her philandering had gotten her into. And that may be the case with us. And the Lord will say to us, as he did to Paul, "My grace is sufficient."
Amen.
Brethren, whatever we have to do, we can do. And God will enable us to do that. How shall I deal with adversity? Remember that God rules this world. That everything that happens to me and everything he lets happen to me will ultimately bless me if I'm determined to let it. Now, we're going to sing that invitation hymn that Mark mentioned. And we're going to address ourselves just this moment to those who are not Christian. You say, "Will I not suffer if I don't become a Christian?" No, you'll suffer. You'll suffer because all human beings suffer. And you'll suffer because you have chosen to be a sinner, because that just racks you. And it always will. Nothing will ever work right. "But if I don't become a Christian, I'll never suffer for being a Christian." I know that. You can escape that. And all the good it does, and all the preparation it makes to leave this world, which isn't what God intends it to be, and to go to one which is like God intends it to be. And you don't want to do that. You don't want to miss that. I tell you what Paul said. He said, "Our light affliction, which is for the moment, works for us more and more exceedingly an eternal weight of glory." And that's what being a Christian is about. And we're urging you now, you who know that Jesus Christ is Lord, to make the commitment and to be baptized into him before this hour passes. We're pleading with you in this song to do that. And we're waiting on you while we're standing and singing.